This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
I'm Mike Beats.
And we said the last time we talked that we would get together immediately and continue the conversation. So about 6 months later, we have gotten together immediately to continue that conversation. What we talked about last time was bid allocations. I mean, TOC bid allocations. We talked a lot about Octo's bids. And I actually don't think we ever came up with any criteria that we really all agreed to that should be a finals bid. So we're going to try to do the same decisive approach now to finals bids. Let's go to the other end and see if we can come up with something there. Or at least, you know, bids that aren't as, you know, as tainted, let's say, with everybody's opinion as the Octos. And we all have so many strong opinions about the tournaments themselves. I wonder if we can see what the criteria underlying them are with the Octos bids. But maybe with finals, it'll be a little easier to discuss because there are a lot of tournaments that just have finals bids. I mean, around in our region, we have, what, two? We have Newark and Scarsdale and Monticello, right? And Monticello is a finals bid now, too. So we have three tournaments right here that are finals bids, and I think there's a lot of others elsewhere. So the question is, and you guys, you know, Harvard-Westlake's also fine. Okay, so what is it that makes a tournament a finals bid tournament?
When you can go to the committee and just say, "Trust me."
Okay.
Well, that's one approach.
Yeah. Here's my opinion of finals bids is that they're almost pointless to some extent in terms of it getting a bid, not in terms of identifying the tournament or getting more people to come to the tournament or raising the profile of the tournament or anything like that. But in terms of just some poor schmo trying to get a bid, a finals bid is so damned hard because you got to beat everybody. You know, I mean, you have to be like everybody except one person to get a finals bid. And usually in any given region, there are some people who, in fact, always beat everybody. You know, so they'll get the finals bids, you know, or a couple of people that are going to do it. So they're just not only are they hard to get, but they're almost preemptively going to go to a handful of people anyhow. So it's just somebody getting another bid rather than somebody getting you know, their first bid or even their second bid if they're having trouble getting bids. It's going to somebody who's getting their seventh bid.
I mean, on the other hand, just to point out, I mean, you, after all, did coach the champion of the Kaiser. That's a finals bid. And that was his, you know, that was his bid, right?
Yeah.
So to point out that sometimes with finals bids, I almost feel like it's one or the other, that the finals bid tends to get somebody who already has seven bids, or the finals bid is sometimes determined that person, that is their one bid, right? Does that make sense? Because I feel like that, I notice that when I look at results from around the country.
Well, when you say that, I got bids at all three of those tournaments. We either Sophie won them and or Zach won one.
Right.
And yeah, so Sophie, I mean, yeah, had a lot of other bids, and she was in these final rounds with people also had a lot. I mean, they're just sort of, you know, they really are preempting other people out of getting those bids because even in the semis, I'm thinking of Scarsdale. If I remember correctly, the semis, I mean, Diana was in them and Sophie and Nate, and I forget who the other person is. So all these people are
actually,
like, yeah.
That was Nate's first bid, actually.
Really? Okay, so that's good for him.
Nate was the kid. Nate was like Matt Ross, the kid who should have qualified but inexplicably hadn't yet.
Well, Matt Ross did get his at-large bid today. So
he did. Sorry. Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, they dug down that far.
Yeah. I was very pleased with that. Well, anyway.
So. No, but I mean, so what we're saying, maybe then there is more, maybe it is more open than I'm thinking, because I was thinking that Nate had actually already bid it up. I didn't realize that was his first bid.
Well, I mean, you know, the other point is that the more general point that you're making is that it is just very hard to get to the final. People tend to think the finals bids are so easy because, you know, it's only a finals bid, but actually, that's really hard to get. You have to win a lot of debates to get the bid.
I mean, you got to win all the debates, pretty much. Right. You can lose like a debate somewhere along the line. You can lose that one, because usually a finals bid probably is going to be, I mean, I'm thinking around here, five-round tournaments, not a six-round, maybe a six-round tournament, but not necessarily. There's no, I mean, I remember with a I mean, the rule was, and there, I mean, this was an express rule, that you had to have six rounds for a quarters bid. But for a semis or a finals bid, there was, as far as I know, no such requirement. So, you know, it is a tough, tough bid to get, and which is great that it is a tough bid. But, you know, by the same token, it's such a hard bid that I wonder if it's a worth having finals bids to some extent. Well, better to have semis bids.
For historical background, it should be noted that in the beginning, and I actually didn't know this until about a year or two, the earliest parts of the TOC, everything was a semis bid, or what we would now call a semis bid. There was like a list of sanctioned tournaments, and if you made it to the semis of that tournament, you got a bid. Now, rather quickly, people realized, okay, getting to like, you know, the semifinal round at Bronx Science is not the equivalent of getting to the semifinal round of not Bronx Science, or, you know, some smaller tournament, right? And so the more modern bid system came into play. So like the earliest TOCs, like now I'm just talking specifically about LD, but this is true in policy too, but like the TOC champions from the 80s and the, I guess, the very, very early 90s, those people, their qualifying system looked very different than the current qualifying system, right? But what that would do is, you know, there would just not be such a thing as a finals bid tournament.
Here's my question.
So you got a bid if you won your state tournament or was the
right,
finals
exactly.
Bid. Yeah. If you qualified to nationals, you got a TOC bid.
Right.
And that all happened in the early days.
There were things about, that's right. There's, if you made it to, I think, the top six at NFL nationals, you get a bid for the following year because I think PF.
This was, it well. Used to be that if you qualified for nationals.
Right, you could go to the TOC.
In that year, you got one of your bids to the TOC, because I know that there was a team from Minnesota that their two bids came from winning the state tournament and qualifying to nationals.
Right, and JW's pretty open about that, because JW, I think, in the beginning said that he kind of pitched the TOC as the warm-up for NFL nationals. That was sort of the initial idea, you know, it was dating back to when it was like a policy-only tournament, that was sort of the initial thought. And that they would be more selective with their judging. At least this is what JW told me.
I think also because maybe back then there were more because there wasn't as much of a national circuit.
Right.
Pure speculation that a lot of schools or a lot of states their speech and debate, like spring was their speech season.
Right.
So the TOC did act as a more of a TOC or an NFL warm up because kids had been off for a long time.
That's right.
Hey, I was going to say, I would love to see these figures. If you took all the people at finals tournaments that were in semis, and would it make any difference to the actual people who are getting into TOC this year? In other words,
like turn all the finals bids into semis bids?
No. I mean, this year, look at everybody who made semis at finals tournaments.
Right.
If all those people were getting a bid for that, would it change the nature? I mean, would anybody be going to TOC who otherwise isn't going to TOC already? And my suggestion is very, very little difference would take place if we had if all finals bids were in fact semis bids, that it would have absolutely minimal effect on the people showing up.
I think that's true of a lot of tournaments, of just about any bid level, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, to get to the elims of a bid tournament, it's tough. At one point, I just casually looked through the Yale data, and about 4 years worth of octafinalists of Yale, all but like three or four of them eventually qualified to the TOC.
Right.
Yeah, but my point being that the finals bid becoming so difficult that it's not a good bid to have at all. So not so much that, there's a very small distinction between the various bid levels, and anybody on a good day could have gotten the other bid. Should there be finals bids at all is my real question. Are they a good... is that something? Does it make sense to have finals bids in the whole, just the spectrum of what we should be doing? I don't know.
I guess, having given some thought to this, it seems, but just a little bit, it seems like a finals bid could be something like a provisional bid where a tournament applies to it. The committee is pretty loose in handing them out as long as they meet some minimal requirements, and this could be especially a good way to do the outreach sort of thing. And then they're on they have a provisional bid for 2 years and it counts as a real bid. But then after that point, they have to show that either they've grown their tournament, or they haven't, and in which case it goes away. They can apply again next year. That way, it would require, I mean, that way, if a tournament never grows, you don't necessarily blame the tournament, but you know, that means the community around them didn't support it. The TOC is not that important to that community, or whatever. I'm pretty convinced that in every circuit, and any where there's a major metropolitan, you can rustle up enough people to warrant the TOC consider giving it a semis bid. Because I don't think people necessarily fly for semis bids, you know, and out west, you know, things are much further apart. So to get to a certain number is a little more difficult. But all that being said, you know, if a tournament's like we aspire to be a TOC bid tournament, either one, there's not any in this region, or there's not enough in this region. Two, we have, you know, we have a supportive school, they want to build this tournament or whatever. The TOC committee could then say, yeah, here it is, and you have 2 years to show that you've grown the tournament, and you know, and at that point we'll bump you up to a semis bids, because you know, this is maybe a lacking area, or you know, lots of bids have been taken away from this area and now it's rebuilding again, or it just goes away, and in which case, you know, like I said, they can try again. That way, I think that Jim's right. A finals bid is, with exceptions, of course. Final bid is sort of a meaningless yeah. bid. And so to make it meaningful as an outreach tool, it seems like you would use that almost as a, like I said, a provision, but where it becomes meaningful to the people that live there, for a good number of the debaters, it should be a semis bid. And the TOC committee could, you know, the semis bid acts as a, almost like a carrot, maybe? And that way people would, and then the TOC needs to come up with better, I guess, better,
guidelines
for what would make someone jump from a, and those guidelines might be regionally dependent too. But, you know, because it seems like we waste the finals bids a little bit, where a semis bid would be just like Jim has said, where either the kid that gets the finals bid is now getting no other one, or it's someone that's gotten a bunch of them. So a semis bid could act as an actual outreach sort of thing.
I agree completely.
And yeah, there's something to be said for that.
And require tournaments not. I mean, and I'm guilty of this. I mean, I don't do a whole lot to promote my tournament. I mean, I fly in some judges and things like that. But you know, if I were to be asked, should you be a semis bid or should you have no bid? I'd probably say, you know, I probably could see it being a semis bid.
What the hell is that?
That's somebody's phone sounding like a submarine. Like,
yeah, where's the Zydeco coming from here?
No, I've actually, while Mike was talking, I was actually solicited by some Russian girl. I mean, which really was distracting because, I mean,
she came to your house.
No, she came on a chat on Skype.
Oh, Skype spam.
I mean, who the hell? I didn't know there was Skype spam out there. And I'm trying to concentrate on finals bids and deciding if I want to go out with this Russian girl. You know, it's like I can't do two things at once.
I think you need at least two bids to get a Russian girl.
Okay, moving right. Go get it. I mean, I look at this finals bids. I mean, what Mike just said. So I look at the finals bids around here, and if I was going to really be scrutinizing those finals bids, because I think those would actually be great subject for scrutiny, and saying, okay, this one really should be a semis bid, because I don't think, like I say, you're not going to affect the actual, you know, bid levels so much. And the other one say, well, yeah, because a lot of the final, I mean, some finals bid, I mean, a lot of tournaments don't need bids. Every tournament does not need a bid to be a perfectly good tournament. We have a tournament here, a Ridge tournament that we love, has a lot of people Ridge going, you know. But I mean, if Ridge doesn't get bids ever, I would love to see Ridge have a bid. That's fine. I love Ridge. But if it didn't get a bid, it's still going to be the same tournament. You know, whereas some other tournaments, and maybe some tournaments might be affected by whether or not they have a bid and whether people show up. You know, and so
on the other hand, though, on the other hand, once a tournament, though, becomes a semis bid, that does change it. I know Joe Vaughn at one point said that he wouldn't particularly want Scarsdale to be a semis bid because then he'd have to deal with a whole lot of people coming in and bid hunting.
Well, I have a semis bid. And part of it is, I think Mike is right. People don't travel. I mean, when I had a, a quarters bid, I did get travelers, and I'm not really getting travelers now. I mean, I'll get a little bit of spread, but I used to get people flying in. People will fly in for a quarters bid. Nobody really flies in for a semis bid, especially early in the year. I think you might fly in anywhere as it gets to be March and you're desperate.
Well, I think that that points to the real issue here, which is I think that there's a difference between an octas and a quarters bid.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
compared to a semis bid. And I don't think there is as much a difference between a semis bid and a finals bid. That's what I have always felt.
Yeah.
I mean, there are differences, but I think that there are far fewer differences between a finals bid and a semis bid than there are between a quarters bid and an octas bid.
I mean, I look at my tournament and the Scarsdale tournament.
And a quarters bid.
I mean, my tournament and Scarsdale's tournament probably had roughly the same numbers. I might have had a couple more people, but not significantly. And, you know, I mean, they were very much equivalent tournaments.
Sure.
So why is one the other? I mean, I'm happy.
If you aspire to be a semis bid, why do you want a finals bid?
That's a good question.
Yeah, because I think some people figure any bid is better than no bid.
Why? Well, I mean, like for I'm thinking about my own tournament.
It signifies you're doing something right.
I'm thinking about my own, but that can be signified in the NDCA's tournament of the year or you know, there could be other or people can just know about it and know it's
what's
a
the
good
likelihood
tournament.
No bid tournament gets the tournament of the year though.
Well, I mean what's the likelihood a finals bid does?
There you go.
I mean, when I'm thinking about my own tournament and I'm like, if what would be the best for, I guess, this region, you know, part of me thinks it might be better for the region to say, you know what, we gave this a couple years on these dates. Maybe I'll try going in the fall, but the fall's so busy already. Maybe I'll just shift what this tournament is. It's not going to be a TOC bid tournament, and those two bids. But you know, because we just haven't made strides. But a tournament like USC, which has been a finals bid now for 3 years, has made strides, and they have a much better infrastructure to be able to get good judges. They have a lot more rooms. You know, that maybe those bids should just shift to that tournament, and that should be a semis bid, and we don't need to have a bid.
That's very big of you. I might add that it's actually kind of cool to hear a tournament director actually say something like that. But
well, my ego's not wrapped up in whether or not my tournament has TOC bid, and I don't. I mean, we don't need it, and we don't use it as a moneymaker, and even as a finals bid, we're not a moneymaker. I mean, we just aren't. We get, you know, we get 35 people, and granted, it was a very tough. I mean, we had Steven Adler and MDB and Meadows and a kid from Boston, whatever. You know, kids flew to it to try to get their bid or whatever. And I sort of think that might be wrong. I kind of feel bad that kids spent so much money.
Yeah, it's one thing to spend a lot of money on an octos bid because there's a lot of them. But that fine, boy, you're really putting all your money on the one number on the spin of the wheel there, you know?
Yeah, and I just think maybe we would be, as a Southern California region, find another place to grant a finals bid other than Harvard-Westlake because, you know, we've had our chance.
I mean, I've only heard good things about your tournament. I should.
Well, no, it is a great tournament. I mean, it's all free food and it's free everything, and I tap right in the cafeteria.
Yeah, if you're getting that many people, our finals bids around here, say what you will about the tournaments, are getting 90, 100 people.
Right. Yeah. But I think it says something that for the most part, in the West Coast, all the bid tournaments attract all the top kids in the region. Like, we're not trying to get our fifth and sixth debaters bids. In the East Coast, it's a little bit different just because of geography. It just is.
I agree.
But part of it is our finals tournaments aren't really attracting a lot of people looking for bids. They're filling up with all the schools in the region. I think certainly the top debaters are looking to get the bids, unquestionably. But I'm using these tournaments. I'm not half the time not even thinking about the bids because they're great tournaments my kids. You know,
well,
and
I'm gonna disagree.
It's nice that they have a bid.
I'm going to just say that yeah, I think that's true. Especially if you look at a tournament like, well, it's interesting because like Scarsdale and Newark, I think as examples of finals bids in our region now tend to attract a lot of the top kids from programs. Do go to Scarsdale and Newark.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a fact. They do. And I'm not mm-hmm. saying that, you know, that doesn't mean that one debater is like better than the other. But in terms of mm-hmm. competitive success, you're really getting a lot of teams' top kids.
Right.
That's not, you know, that.
But you're also getting all these other kids as well who are not in it for the bids.
I agree. Yeah. Whereas I think a tournament like the Kaiser seems to be more like a team open entry tournament, which I think there's also a place for that. I think that's very good. I send a lot of kids to that tournament, and I would send a lot mm-hmm. of kids to that tournament, you know, bid or not. I mean, that's it's just different tournaments serve different purposes.
I mean, on that weekend, if that tournament is there, they could have Octo's bid, they could have no bid. I'm sending the exact same number of kids because it's early in the year, and you got exactly. and you need rounds. You got the Bronx is coming up. I mean, we're going to go debate. You know, we have Yale, we have we have Monticello, and then we have the Bronx. We're going to be at that Monticello tournament no matter what the hell happens to it. You know, so we're going to support that tournament no matter what because you need rounds. I mean, you can't go into an Octos tournament and say, oh, I didn't need to practice on this. I mean, that's just never going to happen in a million years. And we got your tournament, the Octos bid tournament, coming up the next week. So, I don't know how that plays into the whole thing, but the fact that it has a finals bid, I mean, like I said, I got one of the bids this year, so I mean, I can't complain about it, but it's, in a way, but that used to be a semis bid, and when it became a finals bid, I don't think the tournament changed one iota. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, certainly from my perspective, it didn't.
My opinion about a tournament like that is that that's a tournament, and this is not like a, you know, people are going to take this as trash on the tournament. That's not exactly the opposite of what I'm trying to say. So that's an example of a tournament that I just don't even see the purpose of the bid one way or the other, because it's sort of like it's like the mm-hmm. weekend of the tournament is a good weekend to have kids debating.
Yeah.
Right? Especially younger kids. It's the weekend that a lot of kids are taking the SAT, and tons of kids take the October SAT. Mm-hmm. So having a debate event available for the kids who aren't at the SAT is really important, I think.
I mean, they're getting good. Like I said, they're getting 100 people. So it's not like people aren't showing up to this tournament.
That TOC bids could actually have an adverse effect on a community as well too, because then people start thinking that, well, I'm just going to go to that TOC bid tournament, and then I'm not going to go to the other tournaments around here.
And this is mm-hmm. actually a very. It's interesting you mentioned that, because I have a very serious rule about that on my team, where there's an expectation that you compete at least one tournament that doesn't have a bid, because I think it's important to, you know, I mean, I think it's important for all types of kids to go to different types of tournaments, right? And I agree completely with what Beats is saying, because it really drives me crazy, especially because, like I said, I mean, the Ridge tournament in our part of the country is a great example. This is an amazing tournament. It's, in my opinion, is one of the best tournaments around.
That's certainly one of the best run tournaments.
Oh, my God. Dave Ostrzemski is a machine. And, like, that's mm-hmm. just an excellent tournament. He really puts in a lot of resources to get judges and whatnot. And I feel that tournament definitely deserves a bid. But the larger point that I'm trying to make is that, bid or not, it's just a great tournament. And I kind of wish, you know, bids connect to habits that I don't like in debate. I don't like the idea of kids like giving up debating after they get the bid. That's outrageous, in my opinion. And I'm just, you know, I'm airing that out here.
Well, doesn't happen at a finals bid tournament.
It obviously doesn't happen at a finals bid tournament. But it does happen at tournaments because of bids. I don't like that. I don't like the idea, you know, I guess I sort of...
Well, I think there's actually... I will defend that to some extent, because you're like... If you have go to your tournament, you got like 27 rounds, and then you got so much adrenaline. People, I think it just collapse on the ground after having all those really high pressure rounds. You get the bid, and I can see a little air escaping out of some, not all people, but some people.
Possibly,
yeah.
But I guess I also feel mm-hmm. that
not deliberately. But,
sure. Well, yeah. But I'm mm-hmm. talking about more deliberate things. I'm not.
No,
talking
deliberate
about
would be different. Things. Yeah.
You know,
I wonder how many kids drop after getting their first bid or their qualifying bid.
Oh, that's maybe. Interesting that you said that, because I remember
you
having
mean drop from a tournament.
No, drop.
Yeah,
like,
lose the next round.
Lose
the next round. Because they're just like, oh, thank God I qualified, and then just lose all of their, you know, interior drive and just start just
I'm
so
sure
happy.
That does happen for newer ones to the circuit. I mean, people getting their earlier bids.
I know when I had this discussion, mm-hmm. wow, that was like a huge flashback. I had this discussion mm-hmm. with Jed Glickstein at VBI really? Years ago, where we talked mm-hmm. about this exact same thing, because, I mean, I think we're just talking about like terms of like when people psych themselves out in debate, or when they get distracted in debate. But that actually was one of the first times where I really got very interested, and we didn't do anything about it, but I got very interested in terms of like real statistical analysis of debate. I would be interested in seeing that. because I think that's just an interesting psychological point, if nothing else.
But a lot of that could also be attributed to the kid that's getting their, you know, their for the kids, the top kids, for the most part, mm-hmm. obviously there are exceptions, seem to get their bids early.
Yeah.
And then they're the ones that also continue to win tournaments throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, they are just so motivated.
So the kids that are scratching and clawing to get their bids, it was hard enough for them to, and they're probably hitting someone who is one of those super motivated kids who, you know, already is fully qualified, mm-hmm. and they're gonna try to win the tournament. So there's probably some of that too. I also think that, you know, the difference between, I know even as a coach, the feelings I have at a tournament that has a bid and I have a kid there that needs to get their bid versus a tournament that doesn't have a bid and whether or not my kids need the bid or not, my demeanor, I think I become maybe a more pleasant individual at Whitney.
I can't imagine that.
There was not the pressure. I mean, Brendan was there. He didn't need to get a bid, and he got to learn a whole lot by debating 8 rounds. And I could even see it in him that, you know, he didn't come out of his third loss completely dejected and feeling like I've screwed this up, or oh my god, there's another opportunity I've lost. And I think, you know, that there's definitely something that, you know, it's tough to get the community to act as a community on anything, but it, like John's lead about, you know, requiring your kids to go to non-bid tournaments, and I would say one might be even low, but, you know, if I were gonna,
I don't disagree with that actually,
but you know, when you have a huge team like yours, some kids aren't going to a bunch of tournaments necessarily anyway.
Right. I mean, that's actually, I just wanted to interject and just quickly say that what I've actually found is that a lot of the kids on the team don't even really know anymore that it's a rule, because it just becomes part of the culture of the team. Like, oh, I definitely want to. Like,
but I mean,
that tournament, I regularly have to deny kids slots to that tournament because so many people.
But you have almost a community responsibility to send seriously good people to those tournaments.
I agree.
Because you have to support those tournaments with good people, because everybody supports your, you know.
I agree completely. And that's what I tell my advocate. I think.
But there's something nice about when my novices sign up for tournaments. They don't care if it has a TOC. They just want to go debate.
Yeah.
And they don't care if it has a TOC bid, if it's who's going to be there and what the rep of the tournament. They just want to go and debate, and they want to get in as many rounds as they can. There's something... You know, there's something refreshing about that, and I don't like, I guess it's inevitable that as you continue on debate, you become more competitive and you have these goals that you want to reach. But sort of that feeling of I'm just going to go to tournaments. I mean, that's how I debated. I just went. I didn't even know about the TSC when I debated. I just went to tournaments because it's what our team did, and these are the tournaments I went to.
Yeah.
And each tournament had its own end, and it wasn't all a means to an end.
Right. I mean, a similar thing for Bronx Science, in addition to, because actually now that I think of it, I guess a lot of the kids functionally are always going to more than one non-bid tournament, because the weekend of Blake, we have a really, really, really big one-day tournament at Regis in Manhattan.
The Sorta Classic.
The Regis Sorta Classic. And I make this a required turn of the team. I said, you will be debating on that weekend. Mm-hmm. You're either at Blake, because that's where you want to debate at Blake, or you're debating at Regis. And I think that's, you know, it's very cool. I like the idea of having certain tournaments where it's just like, this is the team tournament. We all go, and we're all there to support each other and be excited for each other and blah, blah, blah. And I think that kind of stuff is good. And you know, turning back to the original thing, I mean, this is kind of why I think finals bids are weird on some level, because I think that I really agree with what Jim and Beats are saying. It's just I don't get finals bids. I actually really like, I've never thought about Beats's provisional idea. I love that idea.
It seems like, and the finals bid adds an unnecessary stress.
Yes, like, exactly.
You know, there were kids at my tournament that were, you know, sort of relying on that bid that I think maybe would have come even if there wasn't a bid there. But because there was, there's that added sort of, whatever it is, it's the stress of it all.
Other thing around here, like, okay, the finals bid is the tournament that, I mean, the round that nobody's there for. So, right. Like, you take Newark, for instance. By the time we got to the finals bid, the people that are in that round were the two kids debating and a bunch of Newark judges. And that was it, you know, because everybody else is long gone. And just because, you know, by now it's like 9 o'clock at night and they all have a 3 hour, 4 hour trip or whatever it is. And life goes on. I mean, you know, you do have to get home and every, you know, the educational value. I've heard people say, well, you have to have this round because it has educational value or something. Well, it doesn't have any educational value for anything because for anybody, because nobody's being educated by it. You know, it's long gone. So, I think that's not the case at every finals bid tournament because some of them end earlier, but for whatever reason, Newark didn't end earlier. I think maybe you had six. Did we have six rounds? I can't remember.
We had six. There's six.
Okay.
Rounds.
If you have six rounds, you're not going to end before 9 o'clock in the finals bid.
If you're
Simple
Friday,
as that.
Saturday.
Yeah.
If you're Friday, Saturday.
We yeah, exactly. Those. So we have like a Friday night, you have three rounds on Friday, and then you're going to have three rounds on Sunday and, you know, four or five break rounds. It takes forever. Absolutely, especially, you know, you got to double flight everything. Takes forever to get this stuff done. Something like, I know that Monticello always seems to end a little earlier because we have five rounds. You know, so, yeah, and I'm not a big, I'm not promoting the five rounds necessarily, but on the other hand, you know.
So certain tournaments need five rounds. I
exactly.
Think
it's
six, and certain tournaments need more than six.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, you didn't break. Well, you know, and if it had been a different break, you would have broken. It wasn't a different break, so you didn't break.
My issue with finals bids, and this seems to be, I mean, maybe I'm just unfairly placing this on finals bids, but I don't think I am. My problem with finals bids is that the kid who drops in the semifinal round of the tournament is immediately, like Beat said, there's a lot of pressure now for this bid. Mm-hmm. So you're not pleased with being a semifinalist in a tournament. That's ridiculous, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Semifinalist is a very impressive finish in any kind of tournament. It just is. You know, that's something to be proud of. I mean, any award is something to be proud of, and any accomplishment is something to be proud of. But I think to diminish being a semifinalist in a tournament because the bid was in the final round, to me, is just absurd.
And the bids do define people's perceptions.
Yes.
Way more than they ought to.
I agree.
Yeah, so... Yeah, because I'm when I go to my principal after a tournament, I don't say, "Oh, my kid only made semifinals." It's right. Like, "Oh my God, they made semis!
Yeah,
isn't
exactly.
that wonderful?" You know, so you know, it would never occur to me to think they only made semis. There's no such thing as only making semis. I mean, just breaking, for goodness sakes, breaking is a great thing. You know, because most people don't.
Great.
You know,
I
and
agree.
So at the point where you break, you've had a great accomplishment, and anything that happens after that is even more of an accomplishment. And kids ought to feel good about all those accomplishments. They shouldn't feel like they haven't done the job if, in fact, they've done that job, and they have done that job. And this is something, I mean, it goes back to a tournament should not act as a qualifier for another tournament unless it's the NFL districts or the CFL grands or something. The rest of it's a tournament that stands in and of itself for its own purposes. The fact that it does have some qualifications to something else should be extra added attraction, but not the only attraction, not the main attraction. But of course, a lot of people take it as the main attraction.
Well, this is sort of why.
Sole attraction.
I mean, this is, I guess we're sidetracking, but it's sort of why I really like the philosophy behind the NDCA qualifying system. I'm just going to throw that out there. Because it's not this preordained performance at a tournament that now defines your success, right? Because everything is relative. And I like that a lot because I like the idea that you can be proud of your tournament success on its own stand, like, you know, for itself, not for what it represents to another tournament, because there's no way you can exactly know what was a sufficient performance in that tournament. And there's no such thing really as a sufficient performance in the tournament because any tournament can theoretically qualify you to a tournament like the NDCA. I like that a lot. Personally.
So they measure the nature of the competition and how far you did.
That's
and,
right.
And
exactly.
Well, it doesn't necessarily measure the nature of the competition so much as the size. I mean,
true.
I think I think everyone on the board would admit that it needs tweaking
absolutely.
On how things are calculated, especially in terms of the idea of competition. And, you know, sort of like a tournament maxes out at – in its accelerators or its multipliers at 100 people. You know, like you said, in the Northeast, 100 people, that's, you know, that happens
sure.
a lot. Out here to, you know, getting 100 people is not an easy thing to do.
Why is that true? Aren't there a lot of debaters in California? I mean,
but it's
My understanding is it's always been underserved by tournaments, but you're saying that people don't go to the tournaments that are serving it.
Well, for one, it's I think a lot of it has to do with, I mean, if you just looked at what the and a lot of it is driven by TOC. What a tournament is driven by TOC. The West Coast, the first bid in California isn't until, I guess it's USC is its first bid. And that's a finals, but its first non-finals bid isn't until college prep, and that's the Blake weekend. So I mean, we go almost a semester.
Yeah, that's half the season.
Yeah, and for good or for better or worse, you know, that's how it is. And I think that it's not 100 or a good portion of it can be blamed, and blamed I don't even mean to say that it's a bad thing, but
ascribed to
the notion that a lot of schools that do debate on the West Coast are bound to the leagues, and the league is you know, you have to go to your league tournaments if you want to go to the state tournament, which make invitationals much more rare, and invitationals by a lot of people in the leagues are seen as these evil.
Well, that's like where I grew up in high school. It was like that.
Yeah,
I
mean, if you went to anything outside your league tournament is anarchy, and you know it's, and so
it's funny that it's the word you use, because that was the exact word that my own high school coach would use to describe the bump tournament. Isn't that crazy?
We used to have anarchists there. People had mad bombers and everything. You know,
anarchy. What a flash of memory. Sorry, go
and,
on.
So they just don't attract. And then the tournaments that are big tend to they're typically, you know, they're run by colleges, and this isn't to diminish all the college tournaments, but I think a lot of people in the area have very negative connotations to the college tournaments, with good reason. You know, they and they're 100% seen as moneymakers for their schools. But you know, it's just different on the West Coast. We have to fly to almost everything.
I mean, that is absolute. I mean, what you're describing is so radically different from what we have here. I mean, it's just amazing, because we have up and down the scale of tournaments and quite a good menu to choose from.
Yeah,
and what Beats is describing is true about other regions of the country too. I mean,
well, that's I mean, the same thing could be said about Northern California. I mean, the league system is a very important thing to a lot of schools, and it's the only way you can qualify to the state tournament. Like, you know, you have to. We don't do league because I just don't. I won't go into. But it's just very, it very much drives the way debate is done out here. And that's not to say that that's just a choice the community has made, but you know, we have some schools that are able to do both, and we have schools that but most of the schools out here don't do invitationals unless they're super, you know, unless they are ascribed to the same rules as their league tournament does. Like, we get, like, I don't think we get any entries in LD debate at the VBT, you know, 200 kids, from anyone that's in the league that I would be in, that Harvard Westlake would be in, and that's 10 minutes away.
Wow. And it's just, but I assume that this league is nonetheless active and busy and all that kind of stuff. They're
That's
going on their own path, which
that's right. Yeah. I mean, they're the calm, and lots of the league schools don't do national qualifiers. I mean, it's the culmination of a debate season for the kids, and this is what it was when I was a kid. The culmination is your state tournament, and that's you know, that's what.
One thing about that has to be, it's cheaper than what we're.
Oh,
doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. League, you can get to. I mean, the one reason I've always thought about doing league is because it is inexpensive, and kids don't have to fly, and they're one day tournaments, and
that's like the MHL. What we run.
Yeah, that's you know, that's very attractive to a lot of would be Harvard Westlake debaters, I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just have issues with the league. So.
Sure.
No, but I mean, I can absolutely see that as great. But it requires that you have a whole league doing it, you know, kind of thing. Around here, we have leagues that supplement our, you know, the MHL, which supplements the invitationals, but in no way, shape, or form would ever replace them. And nobody else is doing anything that replaces the invitationals. I mean, at least I don't know about Long Island, but certainly, you know, in Upper New York and Massachusetts and so forth. Although Massachusetts has, at least for speech, a pretty active, dedicated league, right?
Oh, yeah. The MFL is very active and dedicated, but it's also not xenophobic. I mean, the MFL speech schools go to Yale and Harvard and Columbia. And, you know, I bet there'll be a showing at Bronx next year now that you're adding speech crews. I mean, they're not by
any
means.
It's like our CFL. They're not exclusive. They just happen to have what they have. And if something else comes along, they'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Although the flip side, it should be noted that there are schools that only exclusively do league events.
Yeah, but up here it's mostly because of resources. It's
sure, I'm sure. I have no doubt that.
Yeah, like I don't know of any programs in the MFL are like, "Pah, we would never go to an invitational. It's not like what we do." But they just say, "Well, you know, we're a smaller program, and so we stay in state, and we look at the state tournament as our culminating event, and that's fine." I mean, that gets kids around. Kids get exposed to it.
So. I mean, I see that with our newer schools coming along. I mean, they have an MHL every month, and we have, like, you know, very simple entry level invitationals they can go to, and they will point to a state tournament. That's fine. I mean, you know, and they could do that forever, or they could change. And as far as I'm concerned, they're doing debate. It's good. Yeah.
One of the nice things about a hybrid league like the MFL Speech League is you have Milton and Newton South and Natick and some serious speech national schools. So the other schools that do stay in state nonetheless get exposed to that national co-op competition because it goes off to Yale, comes back, is better.
So that's an interesting point. The idea that, the idea that you're getting national level competition in a local league is a good thing, as compared to just having some isolated league that can be totally, you know, broken off the Galapagos Islands of debate, and God knows what they're doing compared to the rest of the world. So it's nice to know that at least that there is communication, so they're seeing these strong schools representative of what's going on, so that people don't get isolated, so they get a sense of what the so-called good people do. And that's a good thing.
There are definitely debaters within I'm not going to use minutes, but I'm going to use miles because minutes is so skewed in Los Angeles. There are debaters within 5 miles of Harvard Westlake that will not even know that Harvard Westlake has a debate team, and vice versa. We will just never, ever, ever run into each other.
If you have a debate team here, I just saw you. I mean, there's just no way you could possibly exist. I mean, this is our brief against the NFL in our district, is that I think that what you're saying exists, that we have all these schools that we don't go to because we're somehow, you know, don't want to connect with them or something. We ain't got them. I mean, we have the schools that debate. We sleep with each other, and there's nobody else. You know, occasionally there's some new school that comes up, some new coach comes and heard about debate, and then, you know, we manage, you know, we try to bring them in, whatever, they disappear, maybe they last, and every year there's some new ones, but, you know, only one or two, and there's just no other thing. It's just one small group of people, and we're all together.
I mean, I will just say that it is interesting. I feel like the Horace Mann program that has started up may be indicative of what newer schools might look like. I mean, it would be interesting to see how many more schools we'd get that mostly just focus on MHLs. They're going to the state tournament and stuff like that.
But they're what I'm talking about, one of these startup schools. They've been good and showed up everywhere pretty much. But it's a long haul. You know, and they've done their first year, and they've done pretty well the first year and shown up, and that's been great. But, you know, 2 years from now, will they still be doing it? Will they change? Will they grow? Will they do more? As a general rule, I can't think of that many schools that have really grown, and you know, usually they come and go, and nobody really sticks around. The closest I can think to one that stuck around was Byram Hills. Byram Hills came out of nowhere a few years ago and put together a fairly solid program.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so That's the only one I can think of that a newish program in the area.
Bronx Law. Also.
Is that where? Is that
Bronx
where,
Law is good? Yeah.
Is that
Bronx
where? Law is where does Chayton?
No, he coaches at actually Harrison is an example.
Harrison is going to be a good example.
Harrison's still pretty young though.
But it's yeah,
very, I mean, he's already a lifer. So
the existence of a team or the ability for a team to go beyond startup mode and to be perpetually startup team, which there are those that are seem to always be in startup, is 100% the coach and the personnel.
Well, yeah, Chayton, you know, you got a national champion, knows how to do it. You know, he's been there, he's done that. So he is there. That team will be there forever unless he were to leave and go somewhere else, and then that new team would be there forever. Yeah, you know, so that is, you know, they luck out. Yeah, you know, Harrison lucks out because they're a smart school to begin with, and then they get a Chayton. Yeah, so, you know, more power to him. It's a great situation. But usually it's somebody who doesn't have that level of experience working with a team or being on a team. And, you know, that makes all the difference. The coach.
Debate at the level in which we participate in it exists because we are addicts. I mean, we have this addiction to debate that we will put other things on hold. We will do things that are not in our best interest because of debate. I mean, I think if you were to look at what makes an addict, what symptoms make it, I think a lot of debate coaches, especially, you know, the more national ones, would fall into that thing, you know, for better or for worse. I mean, it's because we have this desire to exceed at debate and to do it even to our own detriment financially, socially, or whatever. And something keeps us going that not any person can just pick up and do. Like, you can't just find an English teacher that's going to want to give up 50% of their weekends or even 30% of their weekends or even 30% of their Saturdays. Yet we will do that. And every morning at a debate tournament, when I wake up at 6, and when we're on the East Coast,
I play a
three.
Song that Chris Palmer thinks.
Okay. Yes, indeed.
But we have this. I mean, the first word you have to say to anybody who's getting into this activity is Saturday, and you lost them. But as you're saying that, I'm still thinking of Chayton. There is nowhere where you would put Chayton where a debate team wouldn't grow around him. Sure, it just couldn't possibly happen.
Look, I always think about what. Here's a name we haven't said in a little while. B.A. Gregg used to say, because he said something that is very true, and this is a very, very true observation on his part. A debate team is ultimately – I guess this is true of really any team, but I really think it's true of debate because of the reasons that Beats was just talking about. A debate team is ultimately just the shadow of its coach. It is. I mean, because the character of the team will be, you know, set by the coach, the tone of the team, but also just the scope of the team will necessarily be shaped by the coach, I think.
Yeah,
and I think B.A. Gregg's just right about that.
It's either the coach, or you have to have some exceedingly, I was going to say tradition, but even Bronx, I mean, fell apart. Which was, there's no more storied program than probably what Harvard Westlake was before that, and that had fallen apart.
Right, exactly. Actually, I was just about to say, I said, actually, the other example is your school. Mm-hmm. So
The coach is so important, absolutely. Yeah,
and you know, when you, I was talking to someone who. Oh, I forget who it was lamenting the loss of a lot of the North Shore Chicago schools. And I was talking to them, and they said money's not the issue. These schools want debate coaches. They just can't find them. They can't get someone who will dedicate, you know, all that time and you know, whatever it takes. That schools inevitably don't understand, unless you're at a very rare school, doesn't understand what you're doing. You know, that when you go to a tournament, it's not the same thing as taking the basketball team to a basketball game.
That's where, like, the tradition can help, but even that really, I don't think tradition can get you past a year without, you know, or two years tops without the coach at the top. And that's no diss on Joe Gazzola, who inherited a situation of Bronx Science that wasn't his own doing. Actually, what he did was pretty miraculous, but it's hard, you know. I mean, Joe is the first one. We had a meeting with the kids, and he'll be the first one to say that debate directing the team, and the team was so much smaller when he was running it. But the team, you know, just directing the team was his blood pressure went through the roof. I mean, it was a freak out situation for him because he didn't really understand when he was going into it how many weekends were going to be involved, what, you know, during the week work was going
to
be involved.
He liked to ski, and he didn't understand that skier and a debate coach. They're both in the winter, you know. Something's got to give on that.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if anything, Joe is a very good example of that. He didn't really quite know what he was getting himself into. But it ultimately got addicted to the activity and then decided to stay with it in one form or another. So the addiction is important. Wow, this is I feel like this is like – we have this is an interesting way where we came or how we came. That sentence made no sense, but you know what I mean.
How we got onto this, but I think we have talked, though, I think the subject that we're theoretically talking about, I think we have pretty much agreed that finals bids and semis bids are relatively indistinguishable, and that the finals bid may be something really worth rethinking. I mean, for
getting rid of the
TOC,
penny.
You know? Yeah.
I used to defend that was the student Congress bill I hated the most when I was
oh god let us not connect this to student Congress bills. But the other thing that somebody made just a point in passing, there's not a lot of difference between a quarters bid and an octaves bid in many respects, at least in terms of the competitors. I mean, I think there is in some levels, but they should be similar. I don't know, I wish they were similar.
I don't know what a awful lot of bids in an octo's bid that don't happen in a quarter's bid, though. I mean, that's 8 bids.
Yeah.
I don't
know that many quarter's bids anymore, aside from, I mean, I used to have the quarter's bid, and so I don't count. And the only other one I know is Lexington. I don't go to any other quarter. Yale is a quarter's bid. I look at those tournaments. Yale could go in any direction, but it seemed to me that Lexington shouldn't have been an octo's bid and shouldn't have been a semis bid. It seemed to me that was a quarter's bid. I mean,
Lexington's a pretty solid quarter's bid. It was just
the feel. I mean, this year we lost some people because of weather, but I mean, it feels right. You know, sometimes it just feels
right. Yale actually surprised me quite a bit because the kids were always like, well, shouldn't we be an octo's bid? Should we try to become an octo's bid? And I always said no because the logistics of it would be very difficult to pull off along with the rest of the tournament. And it does fine as a quarters bid, and that's where it belongs. But I said, too, one of the things the TOC committee looks for is, are the kids at the tier you want already bid worthy? And so out of curiosity, I went through a couple of years' worth of results, and lo and behold, they really were. Most of the octa finalists at Yale do end up qualifying to the TOC one way or another. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as far as that goes, it actually would be a worthy's octo's bid.
Well, you're talking 10% of your field.
If we were going to try to determine what should make an octo's bid tournament, and obviously a lot of it is once you have the bids, they will come, right? But are the kids that are getting that are at your tournament going? Do you have a good number of them that are going to be? That are going to break at the TOC.
Right,
you know, you've got
which is a different question.
It is different.
Very much a different question. You've got the Bronx, you've got Green Hill, you've got the Glenbrooks. Those tournaments. I mean, if those are the three shining examples of what the octa's bid is, because you know, they have a number. Like you look at the fields, and they're not really. There's no noticeable. There are a couple, but no one that would say that would look at the pool and be like, oh, this entire region doesn't have representation. And in fact, if we were to look, I guess I made this comment at Emory, which honestly I don't think maybe deserves an octa's bid, but that's another conversation. Maybe it was another conversation. But if you looked at the octos of the Emory tournament, like 14 of those kids could be in the octas of the TOC. That were in the octas of the Emory tournament, and to me, that is one of the defining features of an octas tournament.
I mean, that's a really good defining feature. I like that
I've always felt
very telling.
That is what an octas bid tournament is.
Yeah, it should.
I feel like, I mean, I was going to say some other like sort of intangible things about Okta's bids, but actually that sort of sums it up. I was going to say things about like there to me an Okta's bid is something that I don't even to get into the other things. Beats is rough.
I think if you're looking at this year and you're going to that meeting and talking about TOC bids, that is such a great criterion to be evaluating tournaments by, because it just makes sense to me.
Which, by the way, is maybe a good argument, and I don't want to go into this discussion, is another argument as to why Harvard and Berkeley maybe can't coexist as two Okta's bids on the same weekend, because both have noticeable missing people, because you can't look at both of them at the same time. But if you were to look at the elims of each of them, who's missing from those tournaments? A good number, because they're at the other one.
Right.
Yeah, to have those two head-to-head, I mean, I can understand that they are separated by vast distances, but those distances don't matter in the circuit.
Well, and it doesn't matter for the Glenbrooks, and it doesn't matter for Green Hill, and it doesn't matter for Apple Valley, and it doesn't matter for Bronx, because people flock to those tournaments that are the best debaters, right? The best debaters go to them.
Yeah, if you give them two choices, then you'll split.
To get a bid at the Bronx or at Green or whatever is more difficult than the finals bid, probably, because of on the other end of it, though. Not because it requires a lot of luck and some randomness and for you to
Because it's hard.
It's a landmine.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Everybody's good, and you got a lot of people. A lot of good people to go through. Okay, look, it's almost been an hour, and I think that was actually a good ending point, because I think that's a real strong, like I said, criterion for what makes an Okta's.
I'd be interested next week to talk about
next week. Next week will be in about 6 months from now. But that's,
Zach Struver, who we mentioned earlier, the Kaiser champion, made a very interesting post about MJP at tournaments, and it sort of connects to a post that Jim made on his blog, and I would like to talk about that next week.
Okay, with that teaser behind us, we will next week. next week, like we always.
Next week works for me.
Yeah, right. It works now.
Is this microphone off now? Or the recording off? Not the microphone.
No, we sign off and then we go off. So
we signed off, didn't we? I want to talk. I want to make fun of people. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. On that note, we can now make fun of people as soon as we sign. Okay. Good night. Sleep tight. Okay. Now, do you want to make fun of people?
Luck. Yes.